Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
And instead it goes to Bailey!
Hello, villains, and gather round for another episode of Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast from underagaslitlamp.com. The normal order has been restored as an early season home match against Everton has proved fruitful once again. So we'll be basking in the glow of that and catching up on the latest news before looking ahead to this week's action. I'm your host, Andy, and first of all, welcome back to the pod, the boss, Regan. Welcome, Regan.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's good to be back for what seems like my once-a-season rollout. A bit like a veteran defender kind of coming in for a game or two while the more recently seasoned players are out injured or something like that. But no, happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to be in it. And are you saying you're the Callum Chambers of the podcast, perhaps? Oh,
maybe. I mean, when I was saying it, I was thinking more of like... like a Phil Jagielka or something for Stoke last season, but I'll happily take the Callum Chambers mantle.
Yeah, you're way too young for Phil Jagielka. And also joining us this week, second week in a row, James, welcome back.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, good evening, Regan. Hello, listener. It's good to be back on the pod talking about 3 points and the afternoon in the sunshine down at Villa Park. I'm sure we'd all missed out.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good afternoon yesterday. So we'll get straight into that, really. Obviously, the team news was a bit of a talking point going into the afternoon. And obviously, when it came out, there weren't many major surprises. Pau Torres had come in to replace Tyrone Mings, as I think we all expected. The main surprises perhaps were that Luca Dean and Leon Bailey had kept their places, particularly Bailey, I think, who had been taken off at half time the week before. Moussa Diaby made his home debut, and there was a return for John Duran, who was on the bench after an injury over the summer. Some are a little bit surprised by the selection of Bailey in particular. But Regan, fairly standard team selection for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think Bailey probably got the nod because we were at home against, I guess, a perceived weaker side. But, you know, as we saw from his actual performance, which I'm sure we'll get on to, like, you know, Emery's decision was very much justified. I think Dinier was probably the one that shocked the most with all the Al Hilal rumours circulating in the past week. I think a lot of people, including me, expected Pau to be in that kind of left-back role that he was operating in during pre-season. And maybe we'd see no Dinier anywhere near the matchday squad. But, yeah, John Duran, great to see him back. Missed his kind of energetic cameos during pre-season. So it was definitely great to see him on the bench after his return from injury.
Yeah, I think that was perhaps one of the surprises, was certainly Dean starting. I think given that Emery was sort of seemingly really pursuing this formation in pre-season with sort of having the three centre-backs with the one sort of full-back pushing on, which you'd have thought, given the personnel available, you thought there was perhaps a good chance that he would start with Torres in that left-sided defensive position with Carlos in the middle alongside Konsa and obviously Matty Cash then on the right. So to start for the second week, running with the two sort of recognised fullbacks was perhaps, yeah, a bit of a surprise. And again, obviously, yeah, as you've said, Bailey, I think most people would perhaps agree hadn't probably done enough last week against Newcastle to necessarily justify his selection in the team. And I did wonder myself if maybe you'd perhaps see Phil Ajean getting a bit of a run out. But obviously, I think he didn't even make the bench in the end. And obviously, there's a lot of talk after the game that he's quite close to a move away from the club. So that was perhaps why he didn't feature. But yeah, other than that, I think the rest of the 11 was sort of probably pretty sort of obvious. I think the team, a bit like it did end of last season, does sort of pick itself at the moment. But I don't know, when you're picking up 4-0 wins at home, it doesn't really matter, does it?
No, that is true. I think it is interesting that first 2 weeks of the season he has gone in with the more conventional fullback positions and sort of fairly standard back four, and I just wonder whether that's just to kind of keep things fairly simple early on. I suppose when you look at it, there isn't a lot of option with Tyro Mings being out. There's not a great many options there really, and I think it was good that he showed his faith really in Pau Torres to come in and replace Mings. That's clearly, you know, what is going to be the plan now, and you know, you've got to back him. Otherwise, if you don't, then people might be asking questions about why you're not putting your big new signing back there. But you know, it's fairly standard, like we say, fairly standard team selection. The bit when they lined up, the bit I was not keen on was the fact that John McGinn was playing on the left hand side as opposed to the right, where he'd been obviously so effective last season. I was proved wrong. He was absolutely tremendous during the whole game, and obviously Villa again first half kicking towards the Holt end, which seems to be the new way of things under Emery, and it was a typical fast start. It's led to a move involving Douglas Luiz. I think started actually at the back with Torres, but involving Luiz and Diaby, who found Bailey down the right, and he skinned Ashley Young really, and delivered a great pullback, 45 degree pullback to find John McGinn, who roofed it in for 1-0. It was almost like McGinn put the cherry on the cake before making the cake in this instance, because he was absolutely superb. He was he produced a scintillating display in the midfield, linking up brilliantly really with Dean, who was also excellent. Constantly breaking those lines with tricks and turns and runs forward. And it's a far cry, isn't it, really, from last season, when his career at Villa really seemed on the decline, and now Regan seemingly he's going on to a new level entirely.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it was a fast start, and John McGinn had a huge part to play in that. I was a pre-wedding celebration watching on my phone, and I think we were in the final third within the first 15 seconds, and I was kind of just sat there watching it on my knee, thinking, okay, this is going to go the way that our games against Everton usually tend to go. But yeah, the first goal, we looked good. McGinn positioned excellently, like the run to go towards that kind of near post, excellent. And it's great to see kind of, obviously, not so much Mings now because of his injury, but you know, before that, it's great to see that we've got two players that were almost turned into like shells of themselves under Gerrard, and they've really kind of managed to come into their own under Emery. And I think, you know, even though he's still relatively young in terms of footballing standards, but you know, he's probably a more senior member of our squad, but I think he could continue to be part of kind of a long-term vision under Emery. I think he has so many attributes as to how Emery wants to play. He offers something that so many footballers struggle to offer in his in his play style, you know. I know the Athletic released an article earlier, but once again, I think it's probably the fourth one they've wrote about how he uses his arse when he's playing. But, you know, it's something that offers that kind of minute detail that Emery's so well known for. And, you know, like you said, he's performed so well off the right. We thought maybe, especially after the Newcastle display, that the left might be a struggle. But no, he was in top form. I do have a question for you both, and I'll ask it to James first because I'm sure he's got plenty to say about McGinn as well. But it's one that kind of came to me earlier, and I want to maybe stoke a little bit of a fire. If McGinn, you know, finishes his contract, maybe signs another one, or leaves at the end of that contract, do you think he perhaps leaves a bigger legacy than Grealish?
Ooh, that's going to that's really going to get people talking, isn't it? But I think it's a valid conversation, isn't it? He's really sort of, I think, as you said, between him and Mings, really epitomises the turnaround in the club in the last sort of, I don't know, how long is it now, 4 or 5 seasons since sort of coming back up to the, from the Championship, that promotion push, and then now obviously establishing ourselves not only as a sort of a seasoned Premier League team again, but one which is now sort of looking to sort of dust off the passports every summer. And yeah, I think McGinn really does. I must admit, I'm not sure. I thought he had that ceiling when we signed him. But he just keeps getting better and better. And yeah, I thought he was unplayable for most of the game on Saturday. I said to Andy at the end of the game, I think he could have had the ball out there on his own for sort of 10, 15 minutes. And I'm not sure Everton would have got the ball off him. I don't know, Andy, what you think.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think most people know what I think of McGinn. I've always had, you know, a huge soft spot for him. Just the sort of player he is. He's so fun to watch. And he's now becoming more than that. He's always been fun to watch, and he's always been a bit of a throwback. But if you watch him, the ability he has, so when he is making those turns, when he sticks his backside in and rolls the defenders and the midfielders and moves away, he's in total control of that. He's got complete balance. He's got complete spatial awareness. He knows exactly where he is and what he's doing and where his teammates are. And, you know, he's an incredibly intelligent player. He looks like a bit of a whirling dervish, but he's totally in control. And he's, at the moment, he's playing, he's playing way above any level that I thought he had. You mentioned, Regan, you mentioned Mings as well, who obviously, you know, has got a long recovery ahead of him. But I would throw Konsa into that mix as well. I think Konsa has gone onto another level as a defender and as a footballer under Emery as well. They're not the only ones, but they're the ones that kind of stand out because they were players that had such a hard time under the previous manager. So it's just great to see, you know, to your question about Jack Grealish. I mean, for me, McGinn's doing it at the top end of the Premier League now, isn't he? He's going to lead us into Europe. His legacy is already greater than Jack Grealish, in my opinion. And hopefully that'll just continue. And I mean, if he lifts a trophy, he's up there with all the greats, really, isn't he? You know, Kevin Richardson, Andy Townsend were the last people to lift trophies for Aston Villa. So, you know, that's... you know, he'll be in that kind of company, won't he? And he's just wonderful, and I can't wait to see him go back to Hibs. I think it's a wonderful story, and we'll talk about it sort of towards the end of the podcast. But you know, he's just brilliant. I just love seeing it, and I was worried this time last year that we'd seen the last of him really as a force at the club, but not a bit of it. He's the best. I think he's the best player we have, and you know, he's certainly the most effective. So it's fantastic, a lovely goal as well, really good. And we'll talk about Bailey, but incredible bit of skill to get that ball back to him for that as well. What do you think, though, Regan? Do you think of his legacy?
I think right now they're probably on a kind of like a level pegging. I think I'd struggle to separate them. But like you said, you know, he's leading us into Europe, which is something that, you know, at the time before he went to City, we all hoped that Jack would do. And it's almost like John's took on that mantle a little bit. But like much like both of you, you know, he's one of my favourite players. He is that kind of throwback, like, you know, he's like that early Barclays Premier League midfielder for me. And, you know, he's, like you said, this time last year, we were probably thinking, is this the last time we're kind of going to see John McGinn in a Villa shirt? But I think that's one thing Villa are kind of good at, and Villa players are good at, is kind of hitting almost like a rock bottom, but always managing to like kind of rise like a phoenix from the ashes, and somehow pull something from somewhere. And obviously John McGinn's managed to do that with a little bit of help of Unai Emery.
Yeah, definitely, and hopefully it continue.
I think
he'll carry on. Sorry, James, what were you?
I was just going to say, I think he's just a really likable character as well, though, isn't he? Which, I mean, look at his goal celebrations. I mean, I was so pleased when he was the one who got on the end of the cross on Saturday, tucked it away. I mean, with the goggles then, and just the post match interviews, isn't it? I mean, please, Lord, never give this man any media training. I mean, not when I think he'd ever listen to it, but he's standing there with a grin on his face, sort of at the end, sort of lamenting that that's his sort of matched his last season's goal tally already, and that's good enough for him, sort of thing.
No, absolutely, and yeah, let's hope he's going to get a few more. If he keeps making those runs, he certainly will, I think. But Villa was soon 2-0 up. Watkins was absolutely taken out by I think they described it on Match of the Day 2 as a haymaker that Pickford threw at him trying to get the ball. But he was obviously, you know, in the penalty area trying to force home a nod down. Douglas Luiz has been awarded the opportunity to take penalties for Aston Villa after Ollie Watkins' recent struggles from the spot. And he slotted it past Pickford. I think it was a bit closer. So Pickford got a bit closer to it than he would have liked, but very good penalty right in the corner. I mean, it was a bit tricky to see what had happened from my seat. I mean, if Regan, you were watching it on a phone on your knee at a wedding, might have been tricky for you as well, but definite penalty this one.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw it on my minute phone screen, it did look like a stone waller, but watching it back, watching it back in a couple of angles, it looked maybe like there was maybe not as much contact as I originally thought, but you know, evidently there was enough for Watkins to go down and for us to be awarded the penalty, and I'm obviously not going to complain being awarded any penalties with some of the dodgy VAR decisions we've had go against us in the past. But yeah, like, you know, Dougie stepped up, slotted it away. And McGinn mentioned post-game that after Ollie and Cam had missed penalties in pre-season, that Emery's got Dougie and McGinn practicing. So they're, I guess, our penalty takers this season. But that makes me kind of think that it's another one of those kind of minute details again that those elite managers are always talking about. You know, you've got a left footer and a right footer practicing penalties. You've got two different kind of styles depending on, you know, which goalkeeper they're facing. Obviously, we have we see goalkeepers looking at bottles before shootouts saying that this player is more likely to shoot left or right. I'm sure they probably analyse it backwards as well and go, actually, the keeper's probably more likely to dive to his right or more likely to dive to his left. And then you can kind of, obviously, in the moment, I think McGinn said that he'd already scored and Douglas Luiz stepped up and was like, I'm scoring this. He had the confidence. But you know, if someone's not kind of walking up with the ball and going, yeah, this is mine, then you can have that minute tactical detail of going, okay, it's against, I don't know, I'm really struggling to think of a Premier League keeper off the top of my head. I'm going to say Dean Henderson, even though he's not likely to get much Premier League game time at the moment. You know, he's more likely to jump to the left. And so then, you know, you go you go for maybe a left footer who can smack it bottom right. But yeah, certainly a good penalty from Dougie, and an interesting thing to kind of ponder, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we sort of talked a bit in pre-season, didn't we, after sort of Ollie's mishaps from the spot about who should be the penalty taker going forward. And yeah, I mean, Dougie took... I disagree with you, Andy. I think that was unstoppable penalty. I don't think any keeper in the world's getting to that one. He placed it so accurately and hard into that sort of bottom corner. I mean, obviously, Pickford went the right way, but he was sort of... I don't think he was really that close to it. So, yeah, I'm happy for Dougie stepping forward if we get another penalty. I mean, we probably won't now, knowing Villa will be another 6 months until the next one. But yeah, it was a bit of a perplexing one at the time. I think I was, again, likewise, sort of sat in the ground scratching my head what the ref had blown for. And I think initially thought he'd given the goal and the ball had maybe gone over the line, but then obviously realised he had given the penalty. I think having seen the highlights back on Match of the Day now, I'm not sure Pickford made contact with with the haymaker, although not through like a try-in, but I think it was the legs then sort of collided, which was where they sort of took Watkins out. I'm just thankful that
he was totally out of control.
Yeah, I mean,
he was totally out of control of his body.
You look at it, and I'm joking aside, I mean, he could have done some real damage to Watkins in that challenge. Could have been quite nasty.
It's not the first time that he's done that either. He can be a bit of a loose cannon in that regard. But it was obviously an excellent performance all round. We were all very happy at the break after our 9 minutes of injury time or whatever it was. The third was sort of in the second half. It was at one of Keane's first happy new season gifts to Aston Villa, as he attempted to clear, but it just fell into the path of Leon Bailey. It was quite not the most convincing volley in the world, but it squirmed through Jordan Pickford's legs. Leon Bailey, though, is someone that obviously, you know, we talk about an awful lot in terms of his performances and his reliability a lot of the time. But he had a really sort of energetic and dangerous sort of performance in this game. Goal and an assist. Thought he linked up really well with Diaby and Cash on the right hand side. He has had a few difficult months. Many people, like I say, thinking he may leave the club this summer. However, Emery seems to really value his attributes and what he brings to the team, and he can undoubtedly be a real threat, particularly on the transition. Is now. Regan, do you think the time for Bailey to prove now that he can be a top Premier League winger?
Well, I think, you know, looking at it from a this summer perspective, he now has 2 years left on his deal. I think his current deal runs out in 2025. You'd think if he doesn't pull up roots this season, he'll be moved on next season so that we can at least make some money back from him. Although then again, you know, we've got players like once in a blue moon Bertie that, you know, still at the club despite having, you know, yes, he's gave us some great memories, but he has had a very minimal impact as a Villa player, you've got to admit. I thought Bailey might go to Saudi this summer. He was linked a couple of times. And, you know, that I suppose every fan of every club has probably, despite having a bit of an uncertain feeling about the Saudi League, every club's probably got a couple of players that they'd happily see go to, you know, Al Nassr or Al Hilal. But, you know, Bailey's obviously a more potent wild card for Emery than other options, I suppose. And he obviously, like you said, sees something in him that perhaps we don't. This game, we've seen that, you know, there is a player in there. We knew that when we signed him. He was a great player for Leverkusen and he often performed for Jamaica. But he's just so inconsistent in the Premier League. And then there's always that kind of odd little off-the-pitch stuff that you always hear about Leon Bailey. You know, he's been in the papers literally today. for stuff, but also, like, you know, there was stuff like last year or maybe even the year before of him doing I can't even think what they call it, is it hippie crack or whatever in his car on the way home from a match and stuff like that. He's one of those kind of players that on his day is unplayable. But, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? People say, like, show me a consistent winger and that they'll cost you 80 million because they are very few and far between. And the vast majority of consistent wingers don't kind of play as wingers as Emery operates them. They're like the likes of Mo Salah, and it's more of like an inside forward role. But yeah, I think Bailey has a lot to do this season, and I think if he doesn't do it, then he'll probably be gone next summer. What are your thoughts, James?
You've probably took the words out of my mouth, to be honest, Regan. I think, I'd sort of scribbled down a few notes about consistency, but then also making the comparison that actually when you talk about wingers, that does seem to be a sort of a characteristic of most wingers, certainly most wingers we've had, and unless you're really going to spend the sort of the big, big money for the likes of your sort of Ronaldos and Messis who were... do it week in, week out for 90 minutes. It's just one of those positions. I think the nature of having the sort of the ball and having sort of they're the guys who really sort of are looking to take the players on, aren't they? The one-on-one situations, which of course isn't guaranteed. It's tough, isn't it? But to sort of, yeah. And I think on the back of that, I think, and again, Bailey's probably just very, very sort of typical is of how much the confidence, I think, is important. And you can see Bailey sort of had a bright start on Saturday, obviously got the early assist. But he had his tail up. He was sort of busy, wasn't he? He was looking for the ball. And I think the link-up with Diaby, I think that's something to watch this season. I think it's no coincidence they've sort of played together at Leverkusen and Emery's sort of put them back together here, I think. And I think for the third goal at the start of the second half, Diaby was right in the thick of it, causing confusion, making a nuisance. Defender had a bit of a panic attack, took a swing and a miss, and presented the ball sort of neatly to Bailey. Yeah, did perhaps scuff it a bit, but managed to get it through Pickford's legs. So yeah, I was really pleased for Bailey, to be honest, to get back on the score sheet. I think he needed that. I think he is a bit Marmite, I think, with the Villa fans, isn't he? And I think there's quite a few in the fan base would snap your hand off if particularly a bid for sort of 20, 25 million came in from Saudi. I think you'd have quite a few people offering to drive him to the airport, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's true of a lot of players, isn't it? But I think the other side of it is, I think Bailey now has been presented with an opportunity where he is, and he just has to look around the dressing room. You know, the players we've talked about, Tyrone Mings, Ezri Konsa, John McGinn in particular, even Ollie Watkins to some degree, and look at them and say, you know, I could have, you know, I can probably go to another European club or take the wealth that's on offer from Saudi Arabia. Or I could really try and take my game onto another level under this incredible manager that's rocked up at Aston Villa, you know, like other players have done. So I hope it's the latter, because I think, you know, this is a player that had a huge reputation, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. All the big clubs were after him, you know, and they were talking sort of 50, 60 million. You know, and Villa got him for kind of around half of that. And he has had an on-off career at Villa. And I think part of that's due to injury, which can't be helped. But then, you know, part of that is form. But I think if he knuckles down, as I'm sure he does, but if he knuckles down and takes things on board, I think he can really take his game up a notch and be more consistent and produce those numbers, goals and assists, you know, more regularly. and become a really important part of the team. He's definitely got the ability. I mean, I thought his assist for McGinn was absolutely fantastic. You know, really good wing play in such a short, such a small area, and to pull back. You know, a lot of the time that goes either, you know, they lob it up to the back post or they fire it across 90 degrees. But he's pulled it back 45 degrees and he's picked out McGinn. He knows exactly who's there, and I think it's tremendous play. And if that's a sign, then great. But like we say, we have seen really sort of brilliant moments from him in the past, and it becomes few and far between. So that's what he needs to work on is doing those things more consistently, listening to Mister and getting the best out of himself, really. So hopefully that'll be the case. And the fourth goal we'll go on to now was scored by another player that probably falls into that category, although obviously a bit younger and rawer than Bailey. But John Duran came on, and 50 seconds later he was on the score sheet, obviously cancelling out the negative goal difference from last week. It was a poor throw in by Ashley Young. He didn't have a great day really back at Villa Park, and it enabled Duran to get in ahead of Keane and win the ball take a really smart finish past Pickford. Like I say, only been on less than a minute. Regan, he's clearly got a lot of potential here, and he has shown glimpses of it in his short time at the club. But can he be an effective backup for Watkins, or even challenge for his shirt, maybe?
Firstly, you said it was a horrible day for Ashley Young, but you know he probably provided his final assist for Aston Villa by throwing that ball. But yeah, John Duran, yeah, like you said, he's so raw, but he's a player that whenever he actually gets on the ball, I don't want to say in awe, because I don't think he's like technically like, you know, incredible or anything like that, but he just looks great and he's so entertaining to watch. He came close a couple of times last season. I think he hit the bar against Man City with like a thundering volley from outside the box. And I remember like sitting there thinking, Jesus, if that had gone in, my head would have been gone. But, you know, delighted that he's been able to open his account at Villa. He took his goal very well. I think, you know, his first touch showed that, I mean, it was a bit unlucky. It bobbled a bit as he went to touch it, but it showed that how raw he is. You know, he kind of almost lost the ball with his first touch, like bobbled up and hit him off the shin, and he had to kind of chase it down a little bit further. But then again, that kind of gave him the angle to slot it past Pickford. So who knows? Maybe he meant it. Yeah. But yeah, he took his goal very well. It was an ice cold celebration. You know, hopefully he's able to kind of repeat that a couple more times this season. I think a lot of Villa fans will be happy with him. Emery's obviously got a lot of faith in him. You know, we've heard countless times that, I don't know whether to stop believing Emery, because we heard this about Cameron Archer and apparently he's on his way out. But we've heard a couple of times that Duran is kind of the backup for Watkins. And I am a fan of Duran, but I do think he's probably still got a world to go yet before he's mounting an actual challenge for Watkins' role in the squad.
Yeah, I really like this guy. The hunger and the energy he brings whenever he's on the pitch. Yeah, I think as a fan, that's what you're paying your money to see, isn't it? It's really exciting to behold. The quickest goal scored by a Villa substitute, I think, since John Carew in 2006, I think. Also against Everton, interestingly. But yeah, I thought he'd just to sort of chase the ball down. And sort of get onto it. Yeah, I thought he had perhaps fluffed it, but no, he showed great composure then, didn't he, to stick it past Pickford. And you just feel, he's been around the club now, as he was 6 months, isn't he, since he came across from Chicago. And he's had a few sort of cameos off the bench. And you just, I think you just wanted him to get his name on the score sheet. And I think you feel that that will probably do wonders for him. And he can really perhaps kick on from there. I'm not sure he's quite ready for sort of challenging for a regular starting spot week in, week out yet. I think that's perhaps sort of, 12, 18 months off. But is he good enough to be the able deputy and come on like he did on Saturday for the final 20, 30 minutes and tear the sort of a tired defence apart? Then absolutely. And I think, I think I'd like to see him sort of get sort of, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 goals this season.
Yeah, I think that's what we need, isn't it? It's a rotation option more than someone to challenge as such. We need someone that can come on and give Watkins 20 minutes rest at the end of a game or play in the cup games or you know, if Watkins does get a knock and misses a couple of games, that you're happy to have him starting. That's what you need, really. And you either want it to be a young kind of development option that you can build into that role, or an older head that doesn't mind that being that rotation option. It's really hard when you have a striker like Ollie Watkins, who is so good and so important, and the way he plays is so vital to how the team functions, because you're never going to drop him. And this is why this is why it didn't really work with Danny Ings. I think, you know, we've seen it with Harry Kane. It's a bit like that with Antonio at West Ham as well. It's that player that's just so integral to the way they set up and the patterns of play that they use. And Watkins no different for us, really. So, and he's really, really good. So it's hard to really, you don't want someone else there really sort of confusing the issue. You just need someone that's going to push him a bit. And keep him on his toes, because Watkins going off, having missed a couple of chances, you know, he's gone off, you know, with about 20 minutes to go, and Duran's come on and scored a goal, that's going to sit in Watkins' head, you know, until the next game. He's going to want to get back on the score sheet now, and I think it's really important to have that. But we're not disputing which one should play. Of course, Watkins should play, but it's good to have that little bit of pressure as well behind him, I think. But yeah, great, you know, great to see him score, and you know, and probably a quite an important fourth goal as fourth goals go. It's, you know, to draw the goal difference level after last week as well, Regan.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've got a kind of a long list of great Aston Villa strikers in the past, but we've also got a long list of god awful Aston Villa strikers.
That's a longer list.
Yes, it is. Yes, but you know, we've not seen much of Duran, but you know, he can certainly kind of put himself well above other kind of 6 month cameos that we've seen from the likes of, you know, Borja Baston and Samatta. So he's already above some ex-Villa strikers. He's still got a long way to go, but I'm sure he'll make it. I think I've got a lot of faith in him, and I've got a lot of faith in the kind of recruitment strategy that saw him come to the club. So
yeah, he's certainly got a big future. The only downside really from the game was Phil Coutinho, who'd only be on the field a matter of minutes, and he went down with what looked like a bad injury. They kind of carried him around the pitch, which seemed a little bit strange afterwards. But, I mean, James, I'm not really sure where we go with Coutinho now. Hopefully it's not a really bad one. Hopefully it's just a minimal timeout. But he just can't seem to get into any rhythm at all, can he?
No, I think... It was interesting to see him sort of come on. I was really looking forward to seeing him play, and I can't remember, it must have been, 10 minutes maybe, was it? I thought he looked really lively. He was looking for the ball. He was looking pretty sharp. All his sort of flicks and tricks and sort of through balls, it was looking really promising. And then, yeah, it looked like a bit of a nasty injury. I mean, again, it was a bit difficult to see exactly what he was clutching. From the stands, it did seem very odd sort of making him sort of hobble all the way back round the pitch. I'm not quite sure perhaps if he was looked at, he was clearly in a lot of pain, why they didn't sort of perhaps run a stretch around for him or something. I think the only thing is, I think Emery's come out in the post-match interview and said it's not too serious, possibly hamstring, I think. Obviously, it was not the dreaded ACL, hopefully. And maybe it's, yeah, obviously a hamstring, what sort of probably was typically about 6 weeks, isn't it? But I think there'd obviously been a lot of talk with him, another one who's maybe sort of the club were maybe looking to move on. Obviously, him and Dean, Luca Dean are the two big earners, aren't they? They're not starting every game. I think from a budgeting perspective, it would make sense to try and move them on if you get the offers come in for them. Obviously, I think the injury now obviously means that it looks like Phil's going to be here until Christmas at least.
Yeah, I think so too. I didn't actually see the injury, so you'll have to fill me in. Was it something innocuous, or was it resulting from a challenge?
It did have the hallmarks of the sort of, I think he was sort of almost like Mings, dare I say it, sort of going for the ball. And I think there was a bit of a shoulder barge coming together, and he sort of then took another couple of steps and then sort of collapsed. So you did sort of look at it and hold your breath a little bit. And yeah, obviously the physios were quick to come on. I think the reaction from some of the players, you could see obviously the guy was hurt. He was in a bit of pain, and the physios were quick to come on the pitch. So yeah, well, certainly from where I was sitting, fearing the worst, I think for the moment.
I think that's the injury that's kind of been keeping him out for a lot of Emery's time at the club, though, the hamstring. So maybe, you know, it's an age thing, it's a wear and tear thing, and maybe little Phil's just got hamstrings made of Swiss cheese. But like you said, it's probably put pay to any move before a deadline there.
Yeah, that's and talking of deadline day, we will just touch on the transfer. I think Craig talked about it in his YouTube show the other night that he did. We did sign Nicola Zaniolo from Galatasaray on loan. Obviously, a player with a huge reputation. And Regan, you did a wonderful article, just sort of outlining some of the history around this player and what's led him to where he is and some of the troubles he's had, really. You know, he arrives at Villa. You know, he's 24 years old, I think, and he's already sort of had a very, very up and down career. Do you just want to sort of talk a bit about that article? Obviously, go and read it on Under a Gaslit Lamp if you can. It's a really, really worthwhile read. But do you want to just sort of talk a bit about this player, Regan?
Yeah, nice little plug for the article there. But yeah, he's, from my perspective anyway, he's a player that definitely has an ego about him, and I think at this kind of level, you know, top 10 challenging for Europe in the Premier League, you need those players that have an ego, and I think he's probably had that ego since he was signed by Roma. I think he was one of Monchi's first signings when Monchi was at Roma, from Inter Milan, and he came in and fans kind of, you know, they took a little bit of time to warm to him, but once they had, it was very much the case that he seemed like he could be that man to take on Totti's mantle and kind of perhaps even wear that fabled number 10 shirt. And then, you know, he ruptured his ACL. Luckily, it was at the start of the pandemic, so he was out for like 6 months, really quick recovery time, came back, played a couple of games as the Serie A did like an almost like a project restart, and then went away on international duty in September and did the exact same thing on the other knee. So, you know, in terms of like, you know, if he was a car, you'd maybe be a bit worried about him passing his next MOT. But obviously, you've got great medical staff at the club, so you've got to hope that they've kind of looked at him and said, you know what, like the reward potentially outweighs the risk with this player. I think, you know, he went to Galatasaray, kind of had an immediate impact there. Post Roma, he's almost tried to rebuild his career through many different reasons. He needed to go to Turkey. There was, you know, contract issues, and he wasn't necessarily happy. He burnt bridges with the fans, and that is that ego that I'm kind of talking about. So hopefully Villa don't fall foul to the negative side of that in the future. But yeah, the Galatasaray fans, he was there for, you know, 5 or 6 months, and they seemed really upset that he was coming to us. But I think he certainly has all the kind of attributes and capabilities to be a kind of halt end hero. He has, you know, he's towering figure, despite being such a kind of like a brute of a player. He's super technical, and he looks, you know, I wrote in the article that, you know, at least before his ACLs, that he's got almost like an ethereal presence on the pitch. He seems to like glide, despite the fact that he's this like hulking figure of a man. But yeah, I think it gives us, I don't necessarily think he starts every game, but it gives us another one of those options from the bench or for Europe or for a cup game. You know, replacing Diaby in that kind of shadow striker role, or, you know, he could potentially play as a centre forward. I would be shocked to see it, but he has all the attributes that Emery could mould him to anywhere across kind of the midfield or the front line. But it's definitely an exciting one, and one that we're kind of hoping that pans out, I suppose.
Yeah, I think particularly now as well, you know, given that we've lost those potential, well, obviously we've lost Buendia and we've lost Coutinho for an indeterminate amount of time. So, you know, bringing in a player like that with those technical attributes, like you say, is probably quite, quite worthwhile at this stage, I would have thought. And it gives us, like you say, that other option. You've got Bailey and Diaby. Now we've also got Zaniolo to throw into the mix. I'm hoping he's, because I'm not sure whether either of you know, is he carrying an injury at the moment?
I believe he has a groin strain. At least that's what I've read. It might be something completely different, but it's not a major injury. He's probably out for like a couple of weeks. We'll probably see him kind of, I will probably hazard in a guess, maybe say like early to mid-September.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll wait and see, and we'll see whether anyone else comes through the door. There's certainly some rumours flying around. Outgoings more than anything, obviously a bit of a surprise that, like James said earlier, Philo Jean linked to a move to Hull for $5 million. And also Keenan Davis, by the looks of it, might be going to Hull as well. Davis, of course, not involved in any way with the squad, so obviously going out the door this summer. Luca Dean also, like we said, linked very much to Saudi, but last night it emerged that he's quite close, apparently, to a loan deal to Nice in France, where Sanson is, of course. And of course, Aaron Ramsey still yet to complete that move to Burnley, which seemed nailed on a couple of weeks ago, but it's all gone very quiet. There's also interest for Cameron Archer, particularly from Sheffield United. And incoming wise, still linked to a left back. That seems to be the next thing, possibly to replace Luca Dean if that happens. And Marcus Acuna and Tavares from Arsenal have been linked. James, first of all, what do you make of these potential outgoings? Philo Jean and Dean in particular, I suppose, are the big ones from there. What do you make of this?
I think it's all very interesting. I think it's what the club are doing, and I think that everything has got the sort of the hallmark of the FFP around it, hasn't it? I think, obviously, I think the club there's probably no secret. There's been a lot of links this summer for sort of Coutinho and Luca Dean, as we've just mentioned, to move away, and that will be a function of the fact that between the two big earners, aren't they? And if the club can get those guys who don't sort of feature necessarily every week off the wage book, it obviously frees up the funds elsewhere. And then obviously the Philly Jean, he's a lad who's sort of been with us a while, come through the sort of the academy with us a little bit. Although I know he was a non-affiliated academy, wasn't he, in London for a while, until we picked him up. But obviously we didn't really pay much of a fee for him, so that helps to sort of go into the coffers and sort of help the FFP. I mean, I'm not by any stretch an expert on it, but it's sort of, I know it works on like a 3-year cycle, so I think we're coming to the end of dining out on the Grealish money before too long. So obviously the club are going to look to perhaps move on some of the talent, which sort of helps balances the book. So obviously sort of Archer like that, but obviously as we've seen, they have been sort of keen to put the sort of the sell on or the buyback clauses into the contract, I think, sort of, which is quite a clever move, isn't it? Obviously, Keenan Davis, I think it's he came, he saw, he's got injured, and I don't think he's unfortunately, he seemed like a lovely lad, and I think we all wanted him to do well, but it's just not happened for him, and I think his level probably is back in the Championship.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a Championship footballer. I thought that, you know, having conversations with my father-in-law, I thought he would be a good signing for West Brom this season. But, you know, they've gone and signed Josh Madger on a free transfer, so that put Pell to that. But yeah, I think, you know, Davis is another one. It's a couple of million pounds of pure profit, hopefully. You know, we signed him from Biggleswade, so I doubt we paid much in terms of compensation from that. And you know, even so, that was what, like 7 or 8 years ago now. So, you know, the profit in that is going to be good. The Ramsey stuff's interesting. I wonder what the holdup with that is. I know there was a lot of talk about. Apparently we're trying to like pre-agree the contract deal if we sign him back or something along the lines of that. So, you know, I wonder what that holdup is. Is it a potential contract issue about buying him back, or is it we're changing our mind because our team seems to be picking up injuries left, right and centre? Who knows? The Acuna and Tavares links are interesting because they kind of reek of a Digne exit. Tavares would probably be my preferred option, I think. It's almost like a perfect backup for Moreno. They're very similar in terms of the style. They were very attacking fullback, but you know, Tavares very raw, lots of similar attributes to Moreno, and that, I guess that's what Emery would want on that left-hand side. Acuna is a bit more of a like-for-like Digne replacement, similar age, similar stature. I'd argue maybe Acuna's maybe a little bit better and probably would come in on lower wages. But, they're definitely interesting as we're kind of winding down towards the end of the window. But I think one of the big issues for me about our transfer stuff is, and I think I mention it every time I come on the podcast, but like, it always seems like our recruitment generally just isn't where, or at least I expect it to be. You know, we've signed all these kind of staff members that have kind of brought out, or at least have this kind of like past experience that everyone kind of is like sat there salivating over, like Rob McKenzie. You know, he's the man that discovered N'Golo Kante and Riyad Mahrez at Leicester and made them, like, you know, countless, you know, millions in profit because he was modelling data sets on other players that they'd loaned and whatnot. And, you know, we have done some good business since returning to the Prem. Douglas Luiz, for example, now, in hindsight, was an absolutely excellent purchase. you know, you look at Enzo Fernandez and Caicedo and those kind of players and what kind of money they're going for. If someone wanted to come in for Douglas Luiz now, we're looking at making 65 plus million profit on him. And obviously, maybe you've got to take into account like his new contract and things like that. But, you know, he looks great and he looks like exactly what we wanted to do from signing him. But much of our transfer dealings, it seems, under Dean Smith and under Gerrard especially, but under Emery as well, are names. They're established players that people have heard of, but we're not going out and kind of signing these players who are like these data-led gambles. A lot of the signings that kind of like Brighton are making, and obviously people kind of purr over their transfer dealings a lot of the time, but like Simon Adingra, who's recently started playing for them, I think he's going to have probably an excellent season. He's already scored for them in the Premier League. But you know, there's going to be oodles of talent in Scandinavia, in the Liga 2, the Zwei Bundesliga, and like there's lots of players that are kind of worth risking that minimal fee on, you know, potentially spending 3, 4, 5, 6 million on. And then before you realised it, you've unearthed the next Rasmus Højlund, who's just gone to Manchester United. In the past 18 months, he's gone for 1.8 million, then 17 million, and then he's just signed for a Premier League club for like 64 million euros. Like, and that's across just under 2 years. If we're trying to sell academy prospects to balance the books, then surely looking in these areas and trying having a bit more of a more senior focused outlook as well is also a good idea, but it just doesn't seem like we're looking to do that.
I think it's fairly early days with the academy. I know what you're saying. And there's also a different emphasis as well, isn't there, in terms of there are clubs like Brighton and I suppose Atalanta as well, which you mentioned, where they might, you know, that's very much their model. But they're not selling a destination to those players. They're selling a stepping stone, aren't they? And it depends whether Aston Villa are prepared to be that sort of club. You know, obviously Brighton lose their players and they have a conveyor belt at the moment, but that might not last forever. And I think I hear what you're saying. It's nice, isn't it? And I suppose John Duran falls into that category, someone we didn't know before, and he can, you know, the potential he has, you know, to be a top Premier League striker. That might be the gamble that they've taken on him to some degree. But I think it takes time, doesn't it, to kind of establish those scouting networks. And we seem to change that department so regularly. If you think we've had three sporting directors, haven't we, since we were promoted? Suso, Langer and now Monchi. So, you know, and I know they don't rip it all to shreds after every one, but there is, if you're making those changes, it does take time to build that up, I guess. So hopefully we'll see more, because I know it is really exciting when you get a player like that. That seems to come from nowhere. So we'll see. But I also like signing big name players as well. I can't lie. Very, you know, quite pleased with the business we've done so far this season or this summer. But just moving on to Hibernian away now, the first European game for 12-13 years. Be interested in your perspective on this, Regan, as the younger member of this podcast. Obviously it's the first leg of the playoff at Easter Road this Wednesday. Lee Johnson, who we might remember from Bristol City, complaining about our two home ends at Villa Park back in the day. He's leading the he's manager of Hibs. He'll be leading their team, which also includes Villa alumni, including Jake Doyle Hayes and Harry McCurdy, in their squad. It's expected perhaps that Emery will make some changes. However, he will also want to make certain that Villa progress out into the group phase of this tournament, so we can, you know, build towards having a real go at winning this competition. What would you like to see here from the team? You know, what do you think we might go fairly strong, Regan?
I don't know if we'll go too strong. I think I'd like a bit of rotation, maybe not like the likes of Robin Olsen, maybe leave that for the group stages. But I think if he isn't leaving, then Philogene, maybe an opportunity for maybe Duran or Archer. But I do think we'll probably name a relatively strong team. I think Tielemans will probably get a start. Carlos will probably get a start. And we'll probably see maybe even Callum Chambers get a start as well.
James, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, I think, again, I'd like to see a fairly strong lineup. We all want to progress, don't we? We all want to get back into the group stages and get those regular sort of European nights back down Villa Park. And I think, yeah, let's not underestimate Hibs. I think it's that sort of England-Scotland vibe is going to be not to be underestimated, I think. I mean, on paper, I think, yes, you would have to say our squad must be much, much stronger than theirs, and we should comfortably breeze the tie, but I'm sure in practice it's not going to be anything like that. But yeah, we don't need, I don't think, as sort of Regan just said, I don't think we need to ring big drastic changes to sort of still sort of make the changes. So sort of, yeah, I think Tielemans, I think Carlos, I think they will start. Don't know about Gerard and Archer, but I think they'll certainly get minutes, I think. But I think he'll go over a pretty strong lineup, but there will be a few changes from Sunday in terms of the starting 11, I think.
Yeah, I think it could have a bit of a local derby feel to it, couldn't it? That in terms of Europe, it is really, and you know, the Hibernian fans will certainly want to put on a good show and take an English scalp, won't they? That's very, very high on the agenda, I imagine. And it'll be, I think, a great atmosphere. I think it'll be, you know, quite chaotic. I think it's got that feel to it. Fantastic, as we say, for John McGinn going back. And I'm sure he won't want to be rotated out the team for this one. He'll want to play and show where he's sort of come to really in his career. So yeah, I think you're right pretty much with those. I think it's a good opportunity to, you know, to give a start to Carlos after all that length of time out. I thought he looked quite assured when he came on Sunday, and Tielemans has to start, doesn't he? And, you know, and get a good, you know, even 90 minutes under his belt, really. You know, and so, you know, he really gets his feet under the table. So we'll see with that one. Obviously, just to the heads up to the listeners, Craig will be doing his Gather Round Again show after that game on YouTube, and it will be available then to watch on YouTube, and also to the audio version on all your regular platforms where you get your podcasts should be available there. Hopefully fairly soon after, so keep an eye out for that when after the game. We're also playing Burnley on Sunday afternoon, Burnley away. They might touch on this in the show on Wednesday, but guys, this one feels like a big game as well, to continue the run really in the Premier League, and you know, and keep ourselves moving forwards.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be a really tough game. Obviously, they're going to be quite fresh. They didn't play this game week because I think there's still stuff going on with, is it Kenilworth Road? Yeah. And Luton couldn't play their home game. So yeah, they're going to be fresh. We're going to be potentially having some tired legs post Hibs. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I think they looked quite good, even though they lost, you know, relatively can you lose comfortably? Because that's what I was about to say. But they lost relatively, like, you know, handsomely to Man City, but still looked like a decent side under Kompany. Yeah. You know, I can't say that I watched much of them in the Championship, but anything that I did get, they've looked good. So it's definitely going to be an interesting tie, I think. And I think maybe we might be seeing our first draw of the season.
Yeah, I think it's a tough game to call, I think, as you say. I mean, you're not quite sure, really. On the one hand, we'll have played a lot more football, which at this stage of the season, it's hard to tell if that's going to be an advantage or not. I think at least it's sort of happening early on in the season where players are still hopefully quite fresh. I think later on in the season, having sort of Burnley having missed the game week and then obviously us having the extra game midweek for Europe, I think you would be a bit worried. Hopefully, as I say, the impact of that won't be too great at this early stage of the season. But yes, Vincent Kompany's got them playing some really exciting, fluid football. And Turf Moor, and certainly in recent memories, not particularly been sort of full of happy memories for us, I don't think, as it's it's not a place we should have gone and gone away with 3 points too often, I don't think.
Yeah, let's do a prediction. We won't predict Hibernian because I don't think any of us know really what that's likely to hold. But what about Burnley, Regan? Give us a prediction for Burnley.
2-2.
2-2. James?
That's what I was going to say. So I will go... I'll go 3-1, I think. 3-1. We'll be okay.
Yeah, I was going to go for a nice 2-0 win. I think another clean sheet. I think Torres is getting his feet under the table. I think we'll be okay. But I agree. I think Burnley are going to catch a few teams out this season. They do look particularly at home. Certainly in that home game against Man City, they look really sharp going forward. And, you know, maybe just lacking a little bit of cutting edge. But they'll give a lot of teams problems. So we'll have to be aware of that. But that'll do for today, I think. Thanks for joining me today, guys. Great to have you both back on. As I say, check out Gather Round again on Wednesday after the Hibs game, and obviously on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts afterwards. And give us a like and a subscribe. You know, that really helps. And obviously, you get your notifications then when the new shows are released. And of course, head over to underagassetlamp.com for all the latest articles. There's been some really good stuff on there, particularly by Regan, also by Dan, who's an excellent writer as well. I think I did one as well. So go and check the site out. It's got some good stuff come in as well. So give that a look, and give us a follow on all the social media platforms, including Threads, which I'm going to keep pushing, even though I'm the only person on it. And obviously, if you're heading up to Hibernian, have a brilliant European away day. Enjoy Edinburgh. And obviously Burnley as well on Sunday. And we'll be back next week with another show to look back at those games. But until then, stay safe and up the Villa.